This is Images. I'm Fred Martino. Thanks for joining us. Harness your dark side, mastering jealousy, rage, frustration, and other negative emotions was written by Al Galves, a psychologist living in Las Cruces. I'm very pleased to have Al with us today on Images. Al, thanks for being here.
It's good to be here, Fred.
It's good to have you with us. So, your book, this is a very interesting title, a compelling title. I don't think most people, when they think of their dark side, if they can even admit that they have a dark side, think about harnessing it. What, in your view, what is the dark side?
The three ways of looking at the dark side, Fred. One way is it's the part of ourselves that are scary, dangerous, painful, shameful, and hidden. And I would say there are three or four parts of those that I can give examples of. One is the negative emotions: anger, jealousy, fear, sadness, anxiety, guilt. Those kinds of emotions that are painful. We really wish they weren't there. Sometimes they can be dangerous, but they can be very useful to us. They have very useful messages. So those negative emotions. Then another part of the dark side is some of our negative thinking. It's called negative thinking, and it's the kind of automatic negative thinking that people do, and I think we all run into it. Something bad happens, you fail a test, or you lose a job, or your girlfriend breaks up with you, and you start thinking, oh, I'll never be able to do this. I'm just no good at this. I'm just no fun to be with. I'm no good. I never will be able to do this. That kind of sort of automatic negative thinking, that's another part of the dark side. And then the third part of the dark side is there's a part of ourselves that is hidden to us in the sense that we're not aware of it. But it drives our behavior to a large extent. So that's a scary part of being alive. A simple example would be people who are chronically late. Okay, some people are always late. They're always late. Now, that kind of chronic behavior is driven by some kind of underlying force, some kind of belief, attitude, habit, feeling that's going on underneath. Oftentimes people aren't aware of that. Mm. Just as an example, I'll give you an example of what the kind of... In fact, I even had someone admit this to me one time recently in a workshop. This is a person who was chronically late, and I said, well, what do you think it's about? She said, you know, when I'm late, I get attention. People pay attention to me when I come late. If I get there on time, you know, I'm just one of the crowd. No one sees me, that kind of thing. Another reason that a person might be chronically late is they want to give the other person the message that I'm more important than you are. I'm very busy. I'm a very important person, and I'm not going to wait for you. Mm-hmm. You're going to wait for me. Those are the kinds of underlying drives that, you know, drive us. And it's a dark side because it's there. It can create problems. I can tell you some stories about myself in which it really hurt me, mm-hmm. in which that kind of underlying drive hurt me pretty badly. So we need to be aware of it. Anyway, so that's, you can call
well,
that part
yeah,
of the dark
let's talk about this awareness, because this is a big part of this, obviously inherent in your title, Harness Your Dark Side. The admissions that you just mentioned that folks made to you about why they felt that they were always late, those are the kind of thing that most people would never want to admit to someone else. Many people probably wouldn't even realize the reasons for those types of behaviors. Tell me about getting in touch with these negative things that we all have, one or more of, and how you do that. I mean, how you really prepare yourself for the kind of introspection that you need to realize, not just what you're doing, but why you're doing it.
Yeah, okay, that's a great question, yeah. Well, let's talk about the negative emotions first. And let me say a few words about how they're useful. I'll just go through the basic ones. Anger, how is anger useful? Well, anger tells you what you don't like. It tells you what's threatening you, what you want to get rid of, what's scaring you, hurting you. So it's a very useful thing to know what you don't want. Now, you got to be careful because, as we know, anger can drive very dangerous behavior. I always use the example of O.J. Simpson and Martin Luther King. Both O.J. Simpson and Martin Luther King were driven by anger. O.J. Simpson used it to ruin his life. Basically, Martin Luther King used it to fuel the civil rights movement. Martin Luther King was quite angry about what was going on in the South.
Yeah.
But he took that anger and he put it to a creative use, you might say. So the trick with anger is to be able to do that. So let's take sadness. Sadness is an interesting one. What's the value of sadness? Well, sadness tells us what's precious to us. When you feel that kind of real deep sadness about something, that tells you, oh, that's precious to me. I better nurture that in my life. That's a very good thing to know. Jealousy. Well, jealousy tells you what you want and don't have. And so that's a good thing to know, too. And some people, some experts would tell you that jealousy is a kind of important emotion because in some ways it keeps marriages and relationships together. Because when one member begins to feel the other one distancing, one of the things it can do is do things to make the other person jealous.
Yeah.
And then the other person says, oh, well, I better be careful. I might lose this. So
yeah.
That's an example. Let me give you the three other ones. Anxiety. Now, anxiety is sometimes uncomfortable, but anxiety is extremely useful to human beings. In fact, there's a great philosopher named Soren Kierkegaard who said, he who learns to rightly know anxiety has learned the most important thing. Because anxiety gives us the energy and the drive we need to deal with something that's going to be difficult. So here's an interesting piece of research. A bunch of researchers checked the anxiety level of students who were going to take the SATs, right? The Scholastic Aptitude Test.
Mm-hmm.
And what they found was that the students who got the highest marks had moderate levels of anxiety. They had higher marks than the people who had very low levels of anxiety and the people who had very high levels of anxiety.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh.
So you got to learn to control it.
Exactly. To use it, you might say use the anxiety
and
find a way to use the moderate anxiety. And just
and anxiety probably keeps a lot of us from doing stupid things, too. If we're anxious that we might get hurt.
Oh, yes. Well, and fear.
Make a mistake.
See, fear is the great... Right. The great emotion that keeps us from doing stupid things or dangerous things.
Right.
Fear is really useful. When I see somebody has a no fear sign on their car, or
stay away from them,
people don't have fear, are dangerous. But fear can also create problems, big problems, because fear can keep you from doing things that you really should do.
Yeah.
It can keep you from doing things you really should do. But knowing whether to walk with fear or to pay attention to it is a real tricky thing.
Yeah.
And the last thing I'll mention is guilt. And I think you had a question about guilt, but guilt is really useful. I would hate to live in a world where there's no guilt, because guilt keeps people from doing things that are wrong. Basically, guilt keeps people from doing things that they're going to feel bad about.
Yeah.
And so it keeps people in line, right? Yeah. So your question was, how do you become aware of these? Well, here's what I would recommend to people. When you're feeling some kind of feeling, and you know it's a strong feeling, you may not know what it is. Well, so the first step is to stop, if you can. Stop and take a little bit of time and ask yourself, where is this coming from? What is this feeling I'm feeling, and where is it coming from, and what can I learn from it, and what message does it have for me?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And that may take a little time.
Al, of course, the idea, the central idea here of taking something that may be negative and turning it into a positive is such a powerful thing and something that we often have to do in life to survive. But sometimes this is so, so difficult to do. I mean, two examples that probably are common examples, probably examples folks listening right now may have even experienced. One being that you might have had a job or some other achievement in life where you were very, very successful. And I don't mean in a subjective way. I mean in an objective way. So for instance, a great example of that might be someone who works in sales and they sold the most products in their team. But yet, maybe they don't get the promotion. Or maybe they even get fired. Maybe they lose their job. Maybe they lose their job while others who sold fewer products kept their job somehow. When you have that kind of situation in life where there is great unfairness that happens, it's so hard to turn that negative into a positive. What would you tell somebody? And I'm sure you've had, being a psychologist, you've had to tell somebody who's been in a situation like that how they can turn that around.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one thing, when you suffer that kind of unfairness, you're going to be really angry.
You bet.
You're going to be really angry.
You can tell I've been there.
Yeah, and and sad.
Yes.
And depressed. That's a loss. So you're going to get depressed.
Right.
And So, one of the things is that there's energy in anger. There's energy. You can do something with anger. So if you can keep from lashing out or killing somebody or doing something stupid, you know, one of the things you can do is use that energy to recover, you know, or to do something on your behalf. In a situation like that. Mm. Now, you probably won't be able to do that right away.
Yeah.
I would encourage a person to take some time to mourn, actually.
Yeah.
To mourn for that loss and the unfairness of it and just feel really bad about it.
That is really good advice and powerful advice, because a lot of times when you've been in a situation like that, especially if you're a resilient person, you want to make moves really quickly to do something, and
yeah,
it may not be the best decision, whatever
yeah,
it is
really.
You're going to do.
It's probably better to just take some time, and because you have some time, take some time. And then, of course, one of the things I'd want to do is try to become aware as much as I can about what really happened here.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything I did to contribute to this? Because one of the ways you can find out what's going on underneath is by asking yourself the question when the kind of thing you're talking about happens, is ask yourself the question, three questions. How did I contribute to this happening? And usually you can figure that out. Why might I have wanted this to happen?
Hmm.
And what can this tell me about what's going underneath? So let me give you an example. Let's suppose this person who had great success was very competitive in his organization, and he had a way of letting people know that he thought he was better than they were, and various ways of putting other people down.
Hmm.
People don't like that. And they will find a way to get back.
Right.
And they'll use nefarious ways, evil ways to get back at you if they want to get rid of you. So you could learn from that. Now here's another possibility.
And learn this is another example, probably even a much more common example, learn that one of the most common and most difficult things in life that is so unfair is, bottom line, is that how other people relate to you is going to either help or hurt you in life. no matter how unfair that is. And there's also that halo effect where if somebody may not be real good at their job, but they have a great personality and everybody likes them, they may receive much more in gain from their personality than a person who may be very adept in their work.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Fred.
And that's just something we've got to accept. You know, I'm laughing right now because it's something that I've certainly experienced in many jobs in and witnessed and thought about and thought, you know, you could be angry about this and let it screw up your own life, or maybe you can learn from it and try to, as much as you can, try to have a better personality. People will like you.
You know, there's one great truth about all of this. There's only one person's behavior you can change, and that's your own.
Yeah, that's right.
You cannot change anybody else's behavior. You can try. You can work real hard at it, but you can't do it. You can change your own behavior, and if you change your behavior, you may end up changing other people's behavior. Mm. So let's go back to this case. This is a guy who did a good job, very successful, got fired, or didn't get promoted. So the second thing he can ask himself is, why might I have wanted this to happen? Well, here's a possibility. When you get very successful in an organization, there's going to be a lot of pressure on you.
Mm.
The more successful you are, the more pressure there's going to be on you to perform, to continue performing, and to be outstanding.
Yeah.
Also, there are going to be people who won't like you exactly for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
And they will start telling stories about you. He's a brown noser, you know. Sucks up to the boss, blah, 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 blah. There are people, you know, I had a therapist one time who used to tell me, Al, you know, people don't like winners.
Mm.
They're like losers.
Mm.
And what he was telling me was, you got to be careful, Al, because if you want to be liked by everybody and approved by everybody, you're probably not going to want to win too much.
Mm.
Mm. And that's the kind of thing, you know, that
that's
you have to be
very
careful.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about in your book, harnessing emotions that many of us consider to be negative, jealousy and rage and frustration. One thing I find very interesting here is you also say guilt can be useful. Tell me about that.
Well, as I said before, you know, guilt keeps us from doing things that we're going to feel bad about.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, when's the first time you experienced guilt in your life? This is really fascinating. I don't know. Because, you know, guilt, these feelings are hardwired in us. We've been evolving over 30 million years. There've been organisms like human beings on the earth for 30 million years.
Mm.
Anything we can feel, any state of being we can be in, has to have some survival value, Fred, because if it didn't, it would have been wiped out by natural selection.
Mm-hmm.
So these feelings come on you. You know, you don't choose to feel guilty.
Right.
That's not a thing you choose to do. That comes on you. And it's part of our organisms.
It better be.
And it better be.
We've all known those who seem as if they don't
have
guilt.
Well, as you know, and there are people who don't, as you know, and they're very dangerous people.
Yeah.
There are people like Ted Bundy and Jeffrey Dahmer. And
People in the business world who may do certain things with our recent financial collapse. I'm sure there's a lot of people
guy,
right now,
you know,
thinking
whatever
about
his
that.
Name was, the guy, the Ponzi scheme, the incredible Ponzi scheme.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somehow or other, they're able to do that, even though they do have the capacity to feel guilt. But if they don't, if you don't have the capacity to feel guilt, you're in big trouble.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Al, you earlier kind of gave us a little tease that you could talk about personal experiences. Tell me about what you consider to be your personal dark side and how you've used that dark side.
Okay, yeah. Well, I think there are a couple of parts of me that I would call my dark side. One is that I'm excessively competitive. Way, 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 way overly competitive. It's gotten me in trouble many times. It's gotten me fired at least 5 times. And that comes, let me tell you where I think that comes from. My father turned on me when I was 12 years old. At least that's my experience. My experience was that he turned on me. My experience was that he real positive towards me until I was 12, which I went through puberty, and then turned on me. And then for the rest of my teenage years, didn't support me, did not affirm me, essentially treated me with disdain. That was a tremendous wound for me. Later in life, I think I understand why he did that. That's a whole other story. But that wound had a great impact on me. That's one of the reasons why I became as competitive as I became. It also meant that I could be easily hurt, especially by men, because I had a very deep need for approval from men. I still do. Now, if you have a need for approval from men, let's say, it sets up a very perverse psychological dynamic, because if you have a need for approval from men, that means men can hurt you. Men can hurt me by withdrawing their approval or by not approving. Since they can hurt me, I don't want to be around them. And so I will distance myself from men. I will not get close to men. I will not become intimate. I don't mean sexually, but just close in that intimate way with men. So it keeps me away from men. So I end up having problems with men, let's say. So that's one of my dark sides, is that excessive competitiveness. Now, the way I've used it is I have become very good at a lot of things. I've become a good writer. I've become a good musician, a good singer. I sang professionally. I acted professionally. I've become a pretty good athlete. So I've become quite skilled in a lot of areas, which is a good thing.
Was it helpful for you, Al, not only to frame that competitiveness in the way that you have, that you've had great success from it, but also was it helpful to understand what you see as why you were competitive, that rejection you felt from your father?
Oh, very much so. You know, people say, why think about the past? Well, here's the reason. It's not to blame my father, because he was doing the best he could. I know he was. It's not to blame my father, but it's to understand that I wasn't born this way. It's to understand that my experience, what I went through is what made me this way. Let's put it that way. So since I wasn't born that way, since it's a result of my experience and my reaction to it, my attempt to protect myself, to survive, to feel better by myself, so all that, then I can change it. I mean, potentially I can change it.
Yeah. Well, this is a natural place for us to conclude this kind of work, and it is work, to think about why you do certain things, to think about your past, is often a part of therapy. You've attended therapy sessions. You've been a psychotherapist. Tell me about that and how that works and why that's, for many people, an extremely helpful thing.
Yeah, therapy's been tremendously useful to me. And let me tell you a little bit about how I think it works. The first way in which it helps is that you learn that whatever's going on with you, whatever the symptoms are that brought you in, it could be the symptoms of depression, could be mania, it could even be psychosis. It could be anxiety, obsessive compulsive behavior. Whatever the symptoms are that brought you in are there for a reason. Somehow, that's how you're reacting to your life, how you're protecting yourself or avoiding pain or feeling better about yourself or being able to live in the world more comfortably as best you can, and get the illusion of control, et cetera, et cetera. So you can learn that, you know, this all is understandable and potentially useful. The second thing you can do in therapy is you can become more accepting of what's true about yourself. You said earlier on, you said, you know, how do we begin to accept these parts of ourselves that we really don't like, we wish weren't there, we don't want other people to know about? The problem of repressing all that is it takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of energy to hide that from yourself and from other people. And that energy then can't be used for more productive uses. So in therapy, you let your hair down. Because you know, by law, that that therapist cannot divulge anything you say in that session.
Mm.
Even if you tell him you killed somebody, he does not have to divulge that. He can be subpoenaed by a court, but he can decide not to testify and go to jail, and many therapists do.
Mm-hmm.
So you know you can let your hair down in there. You can be exactly the way you are. You can learn to accept all these things about yourself that you really hate or feel ashamed of, and that's very helpful. Then you can, in a therapy session, you can be helped to get into a very quiet state, Fred. And some people have never quieted down. They've been so hypervigilant. They've been so active. So they've never quieted down. And so there's a part of themselves they've never heard from.
Mm.
And in a quiet state, you can receive messages from yourself that might be very useful.
So important to understand.
Yeah. And well, and then you can learn skills in therapy.
Mm.
Real good, important skills about how to get along with other people, how to manage your thoughts. We talked about negative thoughts, how to have more objective thoughts, more realistic thoughts. You can develop some compassion for yourself.
Mm-hmm. All important things.
Yeah.
Well, you can learn much more in the book, Harness Your Dark Side, Mastering Jealousy, Rage, Frustration, and Other Negative Emotions. I know it's available online because before you and I talked today, I saw that it was on Amazon and other places. And it's by Al Galves. He is a psychologist living in Las Cruces and joined us today. Al, it's been great having you here. Thank you for being with us.
You're welcome.